Welcome to Brand Disciples. We're calling a generation of entrepreneurs to be on mission as we equip the church to disciple them. I'm David Mills. I'm gifted to touch the world like Jesus by helping people connect to his mission and by taking new steps toward him. I just love to live on the margin between the church and the marketplace. And I'm joined by Amy Alexander.
Hey there. I love seeing people inside and outside the church walls empowered to be on mission every single day. I'm gifted to display Jesus to the world as I teach what's true and shepherd people in their journey.
So we've identified that the hidden business codes of the New Testament have been wrapped up in the household codes that are found throughout the verses in the books from Peter and Paul. And the reason for this is that there was really no corporate business structure during this time. It didn't even happen until the end of the Roman era. And these household instructions are actually instructions that would have been for the household and the business that they were operating. And we view businesses as economic households. And as members of God's family, these codes tell us how we should run the businesses that we're involved in. Welcome to the fourth circle of relationships that are found in the hidden business codes. We've talked about these codes as a model for the way that we follow Jesus in our business. And the fact that these are really counterculture to the way that people treat those who are not in their strata of social access, right? The household's codes start, and we've already talked about, a culture of business that expresses Jesus through your life and business. And then, which we're talking about now, it has four circles of relationships that are really present in every single business. All of these are tied back to the core relationships in our lives. And of course, now we're going to talk today about neighbors and authorities. We're going to start by reading from this circle and that talks about neighbors and authorities. This is a group of relationships that are really connected to every business. We're going to read from 1 Peter 2, starting at verse 12. Be careful to live properly among your unbelieving neighbors. Then even if they accuse you of doing wrong, they will see your honorable behavior and they will give honor to God when he judges the world. Submit yourself to the Lord's sake to every human authority, whether to the emperor as the supreme authority or to the governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and to commend those who do right. For it is God's will that by doing good, you should silence the ignorant talk of foolish people. Live as free people, but do not use your freedom as a cover-up for evil. Live as God's slaves. Show proper respect to everyone, love the family of believers, fear God, honor the emperor. So this is the circle in the hidden business codes of relationships that speaks to the neighbors and authorities around our business life. And so these are really not the closest or the most central relationships in our business, right? That's really handled under what we talk about with low power workers or powerless workers. And then also in the circle one and circle two, we'll talk about in the next couple of weeks. But these are important relationships that we have, neighbors and authorities. So as we think about the focus here, you read this in verse 12 where he said, when people accuse you of doing wrong, they'll see your good behavior and they'll give honor to God. And then in verse 15, it said, it's God's will that you should, by doing good, silence the ignorant talk of foolish people. So this is one of the core principles in these hidden business codes is that our conduct, our life of goodness through our business is a way that we show people that God is real, and that we, in some ways, stop persecution and make sure that we're treated fairly. And as we talk about this, Amy, do you think, like in most businesses, there are a circle of neighbors and a circle of authorities? Is that like a dumb question?
I think we don't think of them that way. I don't really know how much time people spend thinking about who are my neighbors and who are the authority figures? They think, what taxes do I owe? And how can I prove to the community that I'm trustworthy so they'll like me? I don't think we take it to this kind of language because this language does something different in the brain. So it's really good. It's good to talk about, I think.
Yeah. We do think of neighbors like in our household setting. I have neighbors behind me and the FedEx guy does not know where they live. He thinks that they live in my house. And so he puts their packages on my front porch. And the last one he delivered was so big that the guy had to drive his truck around to get it.
I think to your point, I take that back, because if you're in a brick and mortar almost anywhere, probably you're attached on the left and the right to a business neighbor. So I do think people in that own a business, that's a physical location, do think of those neighbors. And often it comes down to like, are they going to play loud music again today? Or it really comes down to how much are you going to invade my workspace? And can I maybe bring you cookies at Christmas time? So there is that. I think there's a little bit of a sense of that, but I still don't think we treat it with the same social.
We clearly have a lot of instruction in the Bible about neighbors, but I think that from a business perspective, like there is this thing called the mall theory of shopping. And that is, would you get more business for your shoe store if there's one shoe store in the mall or if there's 10 shoe stores in the mall? And what they've discovered is if there's 10, you get more business. That's because you're creating this nexus for shoes, right? So it's the mall theory of shopping. But the same thing's true no matter what business you're in. You are in a neighborhood, whether it's virtual or physical, in which there are other businesses that are doing business. We have a new shopping center being built down the street from us. And they've got a big anchor store, which happens to be a grocery store. And they've got these other smaller stores, right? So the anchor is responsible for bringing in traffic. Yeah. And the other stores take advantage of it. And it's supposed to be synergistic, right? So they both help each other with traffic. But the same thing's true. No matter what kind of business you're in, you've got this neighborhood, to quote a famous children's TV show host, you've got this neighborhood and neighbors that you need to be paying attention to, because they're shaping your industry. They're educating people. So even if you think about it, think about 10 competitors who have a website that's like yours, that talks about the same stuff yours does. When those people visit those 10 websites, they're all learning something, right? So there is a neighborhood that we are in, whether we think of it or not. And then the authority piece is a no-brainer, right? We got to pay taxes. We got to fill out permits. There's a new thing you got to fill out this year. You got to disclose your percentage of ownership in this long, odious form, or they threaten to charge you a bunch of money. We have authorities. That's easy. Like the people we know that have like restaurants, they'll tell us the painful process of getting approval to have their hood in the right place and their wash sink in the right place and the right temperature and the hot water, et cetera. So we know about the authority piece. That's pretty obvious. The Bible's here saying something pretty interesting. It's telling us, be careful to live properly among your unbelieving neighbors. So this idea of properly, it's the word good. And it doesn't just mean ordinary mean good. It means actually good that inspires or motivates people. Something that's actually beautiful or praiseworthy. So to be careful to live in a way that's attractively good with those who are around you in your neighborhood. Like, hey, it rhymes.
Hmm. I really struggle with this one. And you bring up a very interesting point about virtual neighbors, which I think we should dig into in a minute. But I struggle with this one because I feel that most Christian business owners would agree with this passage to the point that it's the only way they know how to describe how they're supposed to bring their faith to work.
Hmm.
Like, it is the idea. If I just am nice enough and I'm kind enough and I'm a good enough boss and I wave and smile every time I see my brick and mortar neighbor and I whatever, then people will wonder why I'm so nice and they'll ask. And that will give me the opportunity to share about Jesus. Hmm. That's how I've heard this described. I couldn't count the number of times that this has been described to me by people when I ask them.
Well, I think that like this fits into the whole context of the household codes and the business codes that we're talking about. Because remember, the first whole section we talked about is the culture of the believing business, right? Of what does that look like? And that you are full of wisdom in the spirit, that you are full of light. So we're not just talking about innocuous and safe goodness, which we make sure tighten up our collar all the way to the top and we comb our hair. So this is really the floor. This is to take away people's excuse that somehow you're a troublemaker or you're a problem. When you have something that you're doing that's attractively good, that's inspiring to people, right? It's motivating to them. It's beautiful. It's praiseworthy. So it's a little bit more than just being a good person. It's really being an exemplar of what goodness looks like. through your business. And so I do think it's more than that, but it is the floor because the purpose of it is to make sure that there's not a reason why people can say that we're troublemakers, right? Because we're going to talk in a few minutes. There are reasons why they're going to say that. And they do have to do with the fact that we're following Jesus. And so we believe some stuff that they find just a little bit offensive or maybe a lot offensive. So this is the conduct, part of the conduct floor that we have to live in. It's more than saying, don't be a jerk.
Yeah. That's interesting. This is if you're the Hobby Lobby of the world and you are doing things like not giving health benefits for abortion. And so you're getting a lot of criticism for that. That means people are going to dig into your story. They're going to dig into you as owners. They're going to dig into you as people in management. And they'll be real happy if they can find something extremely embarrassing and contradictory to your faith. So at base level, we have to be people that are living in such a way that it's like hard to even find anything that would be worth writing a story about. That's a really hard standard.
I don't think we're talking about perfection. I think we're talking about integrity.
Yeah.
Sure. And we're talking about this idea. So it says, be careful to live properly among your unbelieving neighbors, that even if they accuse you of doing wrong, they will see your honorable behavior, right? So the same word, good, is used twice. Live properly is the same word as honorably. The difference is with honorably, it adds the idea of your actual work. So it's not just to be a nice person. It's actually do work that has beauty in it. Hmm. It has something wonderful in it, has something good in it. And so I do think that's a higher bar than just behave. But I do think we do have to take away the criticism or the excuses that people have and make sure that we are not leaving open. They don't pay their taxes. They don't pay their janitors. They leave a mess in the parking lot. They don't clean their windows. You know, I mean, some basic things. There's hygiene things. So you go to a gas station, and if the bathrooms are gross, then you don't want to be there. So that's not the standard. But you know, you go into a restroom in Florida called Bucky's, and they recognize the bathrooms are important. So they have amazing clean bathrooms that you actually are going to drive to stop, right? So It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't have to be something fancy. I was in, speaking of Hobby Lobby, I was in there a few days ago with my wife. She likes to go in there. I go with her because I love her, not because it's my favorite place to go. They don't celebrate Halloween in there, and they don't have Halloween decorations. What they do instead is they start Christmas at Halloween. And you know what? It's nice to go into a place where there's this joyful, positive, uplifting message instead of these hideous, scary, evil things. So that's a choice they've made, and I'm sure there's a business rationale behind it. Of course, they had a great sale on Christmas stuff during Halloween. But I do think that we're talking about what does it look like to be honorable and good? What does it look like to have an attractively good and inspirational business?
So another example of this might be Garden City Church, which is the church of John Mark Comer. He says in his Garden City book that the local businesses in their community prefer to hire from their church. People tell them, oh, anytime I get an application from someone and they say they go to your church, I know we should hire them because I know they will be the best workers and they'll have the best integrity and they'll be extremely talented. Like they're just, people just love the workers that come out of their church. So they're known not only for their love, right? The Bible says they will know us by our love, but also they're known for like excellence and integrity and honesty and like all of these things. That seems like a pretty good example of what this passage is asking for.
Yeah, it is. And I also think we have to bring this idea in of beauty. Beauty is part of the created order. And so to restore beauty and to bring beauty into the world is actually something important. And so I do think that, and beauty impacts people. So I do think, I'm not an expert on this, but I just know that beautiful design and there is something uplifting about that. I remember listening to a podcast where somebody went into a cathedral in Europe and they were so inspired that they gave themselves to God, they gave their life to Christ. So I do think that beauty is an impactful thing. And beauty isn't always physical. It can be a cultural beauty. It can be a process beauty. Like the things you do are, they're attractive because they're seamless and easy to do. think about how we can demonstrate God through our work. This is part of it. It does take away this criticism that people have of us, but I do think even if we're doing good, aren't there situations where people are going to say bad things about us? They're going to say we're troublemakers, we're doing wrong.
Yeah, well,
and some of that's because we're different, right?
Yes. People will always find something to criticize. But I think thinking culturally, we can take the same cultural, what this means in the cultural context of 1 Peter, and we can do the same thing here. So at that time, we talked a little bit about there were zealots, right? There were people that were ready to set the city on fire for religion. And that seemed, even to some apostles, to be the right good thing. And Jesus had to correct that kind of behavior. And so this to me is like another example of we have to take away people's excuses. Yeah. They cannot find those same methods amongst us. And so I have to ask the question here and now, what does it look like now? What are things that businesses can do in the name of Christianity that are just, they're so newsworthy in the most negative possible way. You're going to get news for doing the right thing. People are going to criticize the right thing, but sometimes it's not the right thing. And you're doing it just, I don't know. I can't think of a good example, though.
I think that as I look at this, I'm thinking about the fact that we are counterculture. And so we are going to do some things different, and those things are going to tick people off. And so I do think that part of what's going on here, and by the way, just by way of correction, it wasn't Jesus that had to fix those apostles. It was Peter and Paul in this case. But so Peter's writing to them and trying to correct some of this. So
I was talking
about... you're talking about during the Gospels. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They want to take off their ear, call down thunder, right? Yeah.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff.
All kinds of mean stuff. We're not supposed to be rabble-rousers for the sake of causing trouble. But I do think that there are things that we do and believe that are counterculture. And we see some of these fights going on. We see Hobby Lobby and the Catholic sisters having to sue not to be forced into taking their healthcare funds and putting it toward abortion. We see people that are involved in marriage celebrations that are having a real problem because they don't want to celebrate non-traditional marriages or not between a man and wife. There are other things too. But I do think that part of the reason why this foundation is being laid is that the life of being a Christian, we are counterculture. And in many of the things that we do and believe. And so there's going to be conflicts that we cannot avoid. So this passage is telling us, don't cause conflicts that you can't avoid. Make sure you're doing stuff in an honorable and even a beautiful way so that people are inspired by you.
There is an interesting value that gets placed on people that can really operate in their favor in terms of operating in excellence or being particularly artistic. Or I think about when you're in a downtown, almost any downtown is ripe with social conflict. If you don't participate in the Pride Parade, you're like, there's just lots and lots of opportunity to be counterculture in a way that will make you lots of enemies. But if you are like producing the best pottery in downtown, or if you are the real estate agency downtown that is creating amazing opportunities for people who could never buy a home otherwise, or like whatever the thing is, and that's what you're known for, I think that culture places so much value on those kinds of activities that it actually creates a lot more grace. It's like you have way more, you talked in one of, maybe it was in our other series about the love bank.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's way more kind of stuff you can take out of you. There's just more available to you, more grace available to you when you do something counterculture because you're so well known for this thing that people hold value for. Am I making sense?
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think part of what's going on is that we need to find ways to show God's goodness and God's love so that people are not only seeing us for the things in which we are great in conflict. They should see some of the beauty of the kingdom of God coming out of our work. They should see some of the love. They should see some of the goodness, some of the not only integrity. It's not enough to be just ethical. We're talking here about something higher than that. We're talking about beauty. We're talking about goodness. We're talking about delivering something of real value. Yeah, that we talked about John Gottman, who's a researcher in relationships. He has something called the Love Bank. And in a relationship, you got to put enough love in the bank so that when something tough happens, there is something to withdraw. And so the same thing's true here. It's not about ingratiating ourselves to people, but it is about demonstrating the goodness of God through our work. And I think that's important. And it does create a difference. So let's read the rest of the passage here. Read it again. So starting verse 13, submit yourself to the Lord's sake to every human authority, whether to the emperor at the supreme authority or to the governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and to commend those who do right. For it is God's will that by doing good, you should silence the ignorant talk of foolish people. Live as free people, but do not use your freedom as a cover-up for evil. Live as God's slaves. Show proper respect to everyone. Love the family of believers. Fear God. Honor the emperor. So here's Peter in this case, and Paul says something similar in Ephesians and other places, talking about the fact that we have to honor these authorities. And it's really important. In Romans, he's even more explicit. And Amy, maybe you could read this passage in Romans. I believe it's chapter 13. Yeah, it is. Romans 13. If you just read this passage, it's even more explicit.
All of you must obey the government rulers. Everyone who rules was given the power to rule by God, and all those who rule now were given that power by God. Anyone who is against the government is really against something God has commanded. Those who are against the government bring punishment on themselves. People who do right don't have to fear the rulers, but those who do wrong must fear them. Do you want to be free from fearing them? Then do only what is right, and they will praise you. Rulers are God's servants to help you. But if you do wrong, you have reason to be afraid. They have the power to punish, and they will use it. They are God's servants to punish those who do wrong. So you must obey the government, not just because you might be punished, but because you know it is the right thing to do. And this is why you pay taxes, too. Those rulers are working for God, and they give all their time to the work of ruling. Give everyone what you owe them. If you owe them any kind of tax, then pay it. Show respect to those you should respect, and show honor to those you should honor.
And we saw this lived out in the life of Jesus, right? Yeah, it's heavy, right? So it does go counterculture in our thinking. Like, this is hard for us to even hear, that we should, for Peter to be saying honor the emperor. The emperor was in many ways a very evil person. So he is talking about the sovereignty of God to allow these authorities to exist. I do think it goes back to a moment in human history when Israel, who had God as their king, said, hey, we want a human king. And right, ever since that happened, we have these experiences where the king is in charge and the king's going to tax us. The king's going to take away our stuff. The king's going to take away our crops and our sons and daughters to go in the military. And I think one of the things we have to realize here is that part of the deal here is that these governments are put in place and they're allowed to exist, and they should be reminding us of something, and that is that we actually are longing for a different kind of ruler. And so when we get frustrated and chafe against the way that governments work or the people that are in them, and we're doing this, by the way, we're doing this on election day, it just so happens. Yeah. And so we have to realize that God allows these people to exist, and we should be longing for the kingdom of God. We should be longing to be restored to a divine rulership, which we know will be fair and just and kind and good. And sometimes our rulers serve to remind us of that.
Yeah. Yeah. So where we sit today, as we record this, is election day. Where you are listening, we're a few weeks past. And whether in your eyes the right person or not was elected, we have to walk in that. That's something we have to do. We have to pray for that person. We have to respect the laws that happened under that administration, all of those things. It's very challenging. But it is, I think it's, as you said, what you said is so good. We're longing for something else, and we actually are in a kingdom that's other. And so, I think even in our business, we really have to remind ourselves to separate our politics from our faith and remember who's Lord and remember the sovereignty of that Lord and operate in goodwill and in right standing in the laws and in the government that stands over us, knowing that our actions are actually for an eternal purpose and they're somewhat in some to some degree unrelated from the political reality of this particular year or this particular administration.
And also even our own like business economy, you know, we live within a worldly economy, but we are connected to a higher heavenly economy. And God is able to release and open things for us that don't even make sense sometimes. And so that's important for us. I also think, Amy, it's important for us to realize that the people in this case, in Romans and in 2 Peter, where we've been reading, like they had an emperor. The system of government was based upon an emperor and appointed governors. We actually live in a different system, right? We have elected officials, and then there are appointed bureaucrats. And that whole thing, all the elected officials, all the appointed people, whether it's at the city, county, state, federal level, whether it's the local water district, doesn't matter. It's all a mixed bag. There's well-meaning people in there, all of whom are flawed. And right. there's God-honoring people in there, and there's people that don't honor God in there. And it's a total mixed bag in terms of how they're going to behave. Some of them are doing the very best they can, many of them. Some of them are not doing the very best they can. None of them are perfect. So I think that part of this passage is teaching us that like our normal operating approach in our life, in our businesses, we should be doing good that inspires, and we should honor those in authority. That's like normal operations. That's how we should be operating. Good that inspires and honor those in authority. And we should take all the civic actions that we have available to us within our system of government. We have the right to vote. We have the right to sue. We have the right to protest. Those are actions that we can take. The big question this raises, though, is does there come a point where we no longer should obey? Is there a place where we don't do this? And one of the great authors on this is Francis Schaeffer, who wrote a book called The Christian Manifesto. He's a Christian philosopher. And I'm going to just read a quote here, which I think is really interesting. He said, God has ordained the state as a delegated authority. It is not autonomous. The state is to be an agent of justice, to restrain evil by punishing the wrongdoer, and to protect the good in society. When it does the reverse, it has no proper authority. It is then a usurped authority, and as such, it becomes lawless and is tyranny. So I do think there are parts of our governmental system that really are stepping outside of the authority God's given them. And it doesn't mean that we are going to try and overthrow them, but it also doesn't mean that we should obey them. So there's these lines that governments will try and get us to cross, and there's a lot of them. Here's a couple of them. We can't talk about Jesus in a certain setting, certain location, right? There's been lots of government attempts to shut that down in our own culture. We don't have the right to ensure that our child's faith is growing, or that their gender or their moral character is being protected. It's not, so that's a point where the government has stepped outside of its delegated authority. And if we don't make some space for civil disobedience, example of this in the Roman Ephesian culture was what Peter's speaking to is Caesar was supposed to be worshipped. The reason that Christians were killed in Rome was not a religious reason. There was lots of other religions in Rome. They didn't care. What they cared about was what they viewed as a civil infraction, which was you must worship Caesar. The Christians said, not happening, and so they killed them. So they viewed it as a civil thing. It was civil disobedience not to worship Caesar. When someone tells us that we can't protect our child's moral, gender, or faith character, then I think they've crossed the line and we have to disobey. So I do think there's space here for us to understand that the state does not replace God. The state does not speak for God. And there's lots of examples of this throughout history.
Yeah. Martin Luther King actually was super inspired by the Sermon on the Mount in terms of the way that he, now, regardless of whether or not he personally, on a personal level, was totally did everything right, certainly not, he was flawed. But in terms of the way that he was teaching people to operate in civil disobedience, he took his peaceful protest methods, and the way he taught was based on the Sermon on the Mount. And he taught a lot of really good, important things to people about how do you obey in such a way that's still God-honoring, or how do you disobey in such a way that's God-honoring? Yesterday, I was teaching my children about the story of Deborah the judge, and when the evil king gets killed by Jael in the tent. And at the very end, one of my daughters looks at me and she says, "But mommy, why was it okay for JL to lie to him?" She lied to him and told him that he would be safe in her tent, and he fell asleep. And she lied and then she killed him. Why is that okay? And I thought, that's a great question. Let's talk about that. So we talked about lying that honors God and lying that doesn't. Lying that actually honors God's truth versus lying that's just deceptive. And so we talked through all kinds of scenarios about what if we were in time when there was still slavery and we were keeping slaves safe? Would we tell the police? Would we be honest with them that we're hiding them in our basement? Or would we lie? So we're talking through actually lying to the police. God honors God's truth. Lying to the police in that situation is the right thing because it honors the truth of what God wants and what God has for us. Whereas lying to get out of something or whatever, but talking that through, I think there's lots of situations like that that you're bringing up, right? Where we have to remember, where is God's heart? And not what's the law, but what is the heart of the law? And how do we operate in the spirit of what it is God's actually after in our business, in honoring our president and on so forth and so on?
Yeah. It's good. It is complex. We'll put in the show notes the link to that book by Francis Schaeffer. But I think one of the points of the passage is that if we are not living out a business that's inspiringly good and delivering beauty, and we're not taking care of all of our basic responsibilities as a citizen and a business owner, then we don't have a leg to stand on when we come to one of these bigger issues. We just don't, because people are going to say, well, you don't pay your taxes, or you mistreat your employees, right? So we ruin our own witness here, and because we're in a pluralistic and increasingly un-Christian culture, we're running into more and more of these situations where we have to do what's right before God, and it requires either disobedience to the government or more often disobedience to the culture. We're breaking with PC culture. And if we're not living in a way that is pleasing to him, then we get busted on the stupid stuff. But I do think the focus here really should be on, what does it look like for your business to be inspiringly good, to be full of beauty, to express the kingdom of God through your work? And it's not because you're just trying to be ethical, it's because you're trying to demonstrate in advance, what does heaven look like? Right? Heaven's full of beauty. Yeah. And so I think that's important as we think about how this works. I do think there's a bigger issue here. And as we talk about the attack on even gender and family structures, if you look at a good business today, almost any good business probably has a family culture already. And the reason why we're talking about these business codes out of the family codes in the New Testament is because this is what's wired into us, is to live this out, to live out this goodness that should be expressed in a family and in a business. That's part of how we're designed. It's really because it flows out of who God is. And so even the structure of the relationships we have in our business are supposed to exemplify this beauty that comes from him, this human family that he has put us into and ultimately he's the father of. So I think it's important for us to understand that and realize that there's something about our design that's being lived out here. It's not just about how to behave in business. It's about living out who we were called to be and who he's made us to be.
It's really good. We could talk about this for a long time. This could be a long discussion if we wanted it to be.
Thanks for all your great insights today, Amy.
Thank you. All right, guys, we'll see you next week.